15 minutes ago, Harrison Ford tweeted something he shouldn't. Which, by the way, we live in a world with Harrison Ford tweeting. There's all kinds of stuff going on right now. It's, man, it is less than 2 weeks until The Force Awakens hits theaters. And we're talking about all the news this week on the Star Wars Report podcast. Let's do it right now.
Falcon flight with destiny.
Hello, hello, hello. It is the Star Wars Report podcast. Welcome, welcome, come one, come all. I am so happy to have you joining us. I'm your host, Riley Blanton, the guy who started this little website, StarWarsReport.com, and so glad, as always, to have my good friend and yours. It's Mr. Mark Perlman. What's
hey,
going on, man?
Everybody.
Hey,
everybody.
How are we doing? Yeah.
We are here to talk some Star Wars again. I swear, it seems like we were just doing this. Oh, wait, no, that was last week. The days are starting to blur the closer we get to The Force Awakens.
Try.
I almost think it's time to batten down the hatches and hide under my desk for the next 13 days.
Yeah. Try podcasting about it every day. It's literally a blur. I will literally start, it'll be an hour before showtime, and I will forget what day it is and which co-host is coming on. It has happened a number of times at of course, Star Wars Tonight, the incredible nightly podcast that we're doing here on StarWarsReport.com. So if you haven't, be sure to subscribe via iTunes, Star Wars Tonight, because that has really been taking the bulk of my creative drive in Star Warsdom. And speaking of Star Wars Tonight, they've had a sponsor. I say they like they're not me. I've had a sponsor. Here on Star Wars Report and StarWarsReport.com and Star Wars Tonight. They've been supporting us, and we are now supporting them. We're getting the word out for Waze, the GPS app. Specifically, what I am calling this week, the C-3PO Copilot app, because that's exactly what you can do with Waze this month in anticipation for The Force Awakens. You can download their app, and they've got an amazing Star Wars skin that has all kinds of great goodies from that galaxy far, far away, including things like seeing TIE fighters and X-Wings zooming along with you in traffic because of other Waze users, and of course, all the great antics of Anthony Daniels in character as C-3PO doing voiceover, so that when there's like, oh my, hazard reported ahead, this is all your fault. That's the kind of stuff that you get. So we appreciate them supporting us here at the Star Wars Report podcast. We want to get the word out to them. So if you're listening to this podcast, this is what you want to do. If you want to support us and thank Waze and try it out, go to StarWarsReport.com/WazeGPS. Again, that's StarWarsReport.com/WazeGPS. That takes you to a blog post that my sister Bethany put up, and it gives you all the details of the features and where you can get it, which is, of course, just at Waze.com/download if you want to do it. It's not available on Android and iOS. Make sure that you download Waze and shoot them a tweet. Tell them you heard about them on the Star Wars Report podcast. That's a great way of thanking them and letting them know that we here at the Star Wars Report love driving through traffic only when we have C-3PO with us. And again, we thank Waze for supporting
us. I like yelling.
Exactly. And again, we thank Waze for supporting
us
here.
Don't call me the odds, you droid!
Supporting us here at the Star Wars Report. So we've been rolling along talking about all of these media appearances that the cast are making, all kinds of stuff that we've been talking about. The last two episodes kind of highlighted Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill because they are in the news. And you know what, Mark?
Mm.
Speaking of the news, let's do it.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is! Listen!
This week's selection of news is brought to you by two people. Two things. The first is a person, and that's Mark Perlman. because he put all the links together tonight that we're talking about. And the second are our fine supporters at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. We've had quite a few joining us, Mark, just in the last few weeks because we've had been doing this Star Wars Tonight project. So if you want to support us here and what we're doing at StarWarsReport.com and this podcast and other podcasts we do, you can chip in a few pennies at patreon.com/StarWarsReport and help with equipment and hosting costs, that sort of thing. We really appreciate your support. And a huge thank you to everyone who's been pledging theirs, especially recently in the countdown to The Force Awakens. But let's talk about the news. Mark, what do you got for us?
Well, we have some awesome Twitter action right now. I don't know how long they're going to be going on.
I know it's still
com.
I'm going to pull it up. And as of I'm still going through. Let's see the most recent tweets. I wonder if StarWars.com is still tweeting.
Yeah, there is a live Twitter chat with the cast of The Force Awakens. And yeah, they've been having all sorts of stuff. I wasn't really following what's going on because, like you already said, Harrison Ford spoiled something, perhaps.
I haven't even had time to look at it, but it literally, I just saw on Twitter people talking about, oh yeah, they just took down a tweet or something like that.
Yeah, I like Mark Hamill. Hey, JJ, can you clear up a rumor for me? Does JJ actually stand for Jar Jar?
Mark, I have an idea here. They're still going, actually. So I'm just going to leave Twitter open, and throughout the show, as we're talking, if anyone tweets something interesting, sort of like, I would like my own Millennium Falcon. Gary would be the driver. Carrie Fisher. So they're still going on. So I will just bring in commentary on the live tweeting that's going on right now. The hashtag is hashtag Twitter Awakens. So... man, and it's buzzing along, man. I'm looking at my timeline, and there it's a hopping.
I just say real quick, this is something I hope they do again more often. I would hope especially they do it after the film comes out, when, because like right now, like, you know, Harrison Ford has a tweet, they delete the tweet, everyone's like, oh, did you catch that spoiler? Oh, I screenshotted it, you know, it'll become like hype news for the moment. But once that's over, once everyone's had the opportunity to see it, granted not everyone's gonna have it and there'll still be people going, dude, spoiler, I haven't seen it yet, but once the main thing's out there, everyone's had their chance to get to be able to talk with them and talk about their characters and stuff again, I think that'll be so cool. And StarWars.com has done things like this in the past. It's just something I hope that they really start ramping up and doing a lot more of, because that's the side of this fandom that has always been the heart of the fandom. I mean, they were doing stuff like this with the forums at StarWars.com. You know, they would give authors their own threads and stuff, and actors and stuff. Actresses would come and be able to interact with the fans, and it was really cool. You know, you would see these characters out there as just regular people, you know, and you get to see that they also are fans. And, you know, you and I, we love watching, you know, John and Daisy just get kicks out of, you know, seeing themselves up on posters and stuff. And
absolutely.
That's the side of it that I think that most people in fandom forget, is that, you know, they're human too, and they're also fans.
I am. If you have not, what you need to do right now, listening to this podcast, is go, if you have a Snapchat account, follow John Boyega. Because he's in the middle of the press tour for The Force Awakens right now, and he's chronicling all and posting it on Snapchat. So do it. It's awesome. Because it's literally like him and his friends running around, going from dressing room, changing, doing interviews, doing photo shoots. It's like they're insanely busy right now, and you're getting like a firsthand. It's sort of like you're friends with John Boyega, because it's like traveling around New York and wherever else he's doing press and promo. One thing I want to mention, Mark, while we're talking about them, there's an amazing set of Time Magazine yesterday posted portraits that they just did with the entire cast. And Mark Hamill looks pretty darn good right now.
Oh, I see what it is that Ford did. Okay.
Did you already
37
look
minutes ago. It's a small one. And I don't even know if I want to even say it, because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's giving context to a scene between two characters that we thought may or may not have said sword fight type scene. And I will leave their names out of it, because that's the spoil. You could go and check it out at hashtag Twitter Awakens. You know, look about 38 minutes ago right now, but
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that one to me is not like major, but I think it's just that building the case of, you know, we got 13 days to go, and it's the little things like this that are just going to keep adding up. And, you know, through the visual trailers that we've had, I've come to this conclusion that there are at least two, if not three, major battles that are happening in this film that we know of based off of this. And it's like these little things start adding up, and before you know it, you're going to run out of time in the film. You know, yeah. At some point, you're going to get enough enough context that whether you did or didn't put two or three and five together and come up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's there are people out there, man.
Absolutely, man. It's pretty interesting to see this going on. Kathleen Kennedy just tweeted, "This movie is pretty nonstop from beginning to end." So they're talking about the mindset on the first day of. We will continue to go through these stories, Mark. With the Twitter chat, I mean, that's kind of interesting in and of itself in that this is the first time that they've had that much of a cast all together doing a Twitter chat.
Yeah, and it's lasted this long. Typically, when they do stuff like this on Facebook, especially Facebook,
yeah.
It's like they'll get like 20 tweets in from like John Miller, and then all of a sudden, crash, we have a problem, we're trying to fix it. But this is continuing to go, and honestly, I didn't think it would go longer than an hour.
Yeah.
But then again, I could see it going 2 hours easy enough, especially with enough people engaging.
Well, we're almost an hour and a half into it, so that's pretty interesting. But you know what else is interesting, Mark, is not just – PR is a multifaceted, event. Event's not the right word, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, when you're talking about public relations for a movie, when you're trying to get the word out, get the buzz going, there are multiple aspects. It's more than just doing giant press tours and interviews and you know, photo shoots for Time magazine and all that good stuff. It's also about showing your human side. And it's sometimes hard to do that, and a lot of stars don't. But you know who does? Mark? Mark does. And I'm not talking about Herleman. I'm talking about Hamill.
The other Mark H.
I just noticed how similar your two names are. Herleman or Hamill.
You know, I get it all the time. I'm like, from my point of view, it's really weird because I see Mark H. everywhere, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's not me. That's not that popular.
The other guy. He was like popsicle sticks. We were putting together. We had the furry guy, and we had pig face, and we had. That's my impression of Mark Hamill.
Pig face and snot nose.
Yeah. We didn't know what we were doing. Well, we had the dog.
That was
co-pilot.
One of the things too that we have, Riley, is that Mark Hamill actually was hiding as a trooper during some of the Arts Night Friday the 4th December stuff going on.
Exactly. No, he was not just hiding as a trooper, but Mark Hamill actually working with Omaze. Of course, we talked about not too long ago. Teresa was on the show when we watched Harrison Ford make the announcement that they're doing a big charity drive so that two lucky fans are going to win their tickets to the premiere of The Force Awakens. I can already tell you. Ain't going to be me. You can donate to charity and get your chance to go there. And it's freaking Harrison Ford, Han Solo, who made the announcement. And so you get to see all the amazing reactions of people who were on Skype as he was doing various bits. To exit, but it doesn't end there. Mark
Hamill have like big sit down round tables with the cast. Like, hey, guess what? You won the Lucas package. You're gonna get flown out to Lucasfilm, and you're gonna get to sit with the entire cast and crew. J.J. Abrams is gonna be right on your left side, and Kathleen Kennedy is gonna be on your left. Okay, sign me up.
Absolutely, and they're drumming up the hype even more because Mark Hamill was out hitting the streets in stormtrooper armor. Not just, you know, the new Force Awakens Stormtrooper armor, for that matter. And it's an amazing video for a lot of reasons. My big takeaway was it was really cool to see him doing charity, and it was really cool to see him out in front of the public for the first time. For the first time in forever, Luke Skywalker's doing press, right? So there's my little Frozen reference. There you go.
It's cool because, like, during Celebration, you know, John Boyega, he did it. Daisy Ridley did it. And I think it's a brilliant move, not just for them because they're able to go out and you know, get that anonymity they had before they became stars in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But it also works because now, you know, you find out, oh my gosh, you know, Mark Hamill was there the whole time. Who else? You know, you start like wanting to lift up everybody's armor to see who it is, because you're like, dude, that stormtrooper could have been somebody really cool. Because, you know, from the of, you know, I've only gone to this last celebration, just walking around and seeing the celebrities was pretty cool in and of itself. But the idea that they might actually be standing right next to you, I had similar situations like that when I was hanging out with We Talk Clones, now Ion Cannon, the guys there, because they know some people that are, you know, higher ups in different areas of things, you know, like Henry Gilroy, like. They're pointing out, there's Henry right there. I'm like, wait, who? And they're like, he's the guy that wrestled. Oh, my God. Like, I would have never known. You know, and I was having this blast. We're sitting in line waiting to get into one of the things. And the guy that did the season 2 Rebels trailer was literally standing in line with us. We were shooting the proverbial Sith for about 30 minutes. And then, you know, after the fact, William leans over. Oh, by the way, that's the guy that did the trailer. I'm like, are you kidding me? It was really cool.
Yeah, no, that's so true. It is funny. I really like the fact that you get to see him participating in promoting this charity, and it's really cool to see Mark Hamill. But what gets me most excited that I saw in this video was seeing Mark Hamill in such amazing shape. He's lost even more weight since the photos we saw of him. Like, if you remember when Episode 7 wrapped, he posted a photo of his beard right before he was about to shave it. But now he's lost even more weight. In fact, I saw my Google News alert earlier this week. I forget what the who it was that had the story, but Mark Hamill was quoted as saying that he lost 50 pounds to return to his role as Luke Skywalker, which I think is amazing. It's quite a feat of dedication. It shows how badly he is personally investing himself in the role of Luke Skywalker again, and I just find that exciting because... and I was texting with our good buddy Steve Glosson earlier today, and I felt a little, and I talked about it a long time ago on Geek Out Loud, but there was a time when I was honestly very nervous that Mark Hamill today wouldn't do justice to the Luke Skywalker that we all came to love, you know, 35 years ago. And
see,
I couldn't be more wrong.
I was the opposite. He was the only one I was like, okay, I want him back. But it was the other two I was like, you know, I don't know. But it's a story that I didn't put into our show notes because I wasn't sure if we would cover it. But the fact that you brought it up the way you did, I want to kind of throw it out there to you, because they had another thing going out there today about Carrie Fisher dropping weight and how she was pressured to do it. And a lot of sites were running with it going, you know, hey, this is classic male shaming the lady. And you know, I was kind of coming from it from like, you know, are we sensationalizing this? Because male actors do this kind of stuff all the time, and we give them props for it. But when it happens to it's a different reaction. It's like, well, we're forcing her to do it. But it's like, think about Tobey Maguire going from Spider-Man to Seabiscuit and that dramatic weight loss. Or Christian Bale when he did that Prisoner of War movie and then going to Batman and stuff. I mean, these guys were brutalizing their bodies for these roles. And nobody shamed Hollywood for doing that to them.
Although, let's be honest, Christian Bale is insane. Legitimately so. Like, I don't think Christian Bale counts. Mark, can you hear me okay? Just want to make sure.
I can.
Okay, good.
You.
I was making sure our connection went through. Skype's still running great, but you know, for some reason Chrome isn't uploading. But sorry, I lost my train of thought there. It was
Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill's dramatic weight loss.
Exactly.
For their roles. I think you and I are both in that same position. Even though we're coming up from different angles, the big three characters are in a unique spot. I mean, Legends could never take their current, as of today, pictures and slap it on a book. They had to make it look like the characters progressed from that point. And so they always look different anyway. So it was a really odd place for these actors, these, you know, the human beings to go, well, I got to get back to how I looked when I was 19. Like, that's rough because time takes its toll on a human body.
Yeah, absolutely, and I won't. You know, he doesn't look. See, I don't want to get too caught up in like exactly commenting on the exact physical features of Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill today, 30 years after they did the original trilogy. But suffice it to say, if you look at these Time magazine photos, Mark, they both look absolutely stunning, and they both deserve amazing kudos for the work they've put in. And I really hope that translates on the big screen in terms of acting as well, and in terms of us falling in love once again with the characters that we did fall in love with all those years ago.
Well, speaking of falling in love, there was that great article out there that was talking about the women of Star Wars speaking out about their new empire. And one of the things that I really liked about it was the focus of Rey, especially Rey being a pilot. You know, what they said about her character being so strong-willed as a pilot, it just had my mind racing. And, you know, we've seen recent trailers, like they showed that one little clip where her and Finn are running towards one of the transports, and he's like, you know, we need a pilot. And she's like, we have one. And it's clear. It's like, it's her. You know, we've seen earlier little teaser spots where, like, is that her flying the Millennium Falcon? And I think it's shaping up to be clearly yes. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting about her being such a strong pilot is it almost makes you feel like we have the answer to that last name. You know, Anakin Skywalker, amazing pilot. Luke Skywalker, amazing pilot. Rey, amazing pilot. Coincidence? I almost think not.
And this is from Empire Magazine. I assume it looks like it. Or is that
Let
just... Or am I just...
This is entertainment. Los Angeles Times.
Yeah, LA Times. See, that I just saw Empire and I was confused. Yeah, it's yeah. It's very interesting to see Rey kind of... I feel like she and John Boyega, at least in terms of the marketing, are getting kind of double billing when it comes to the leads of this new movie. But as I look at the little bit that we do know, especially like this idea of her being a strong pilot, I can't help but kind of wonder if she is truly, instead of the Princess Leia role from A New Hope, if she's more of the Luke Skywalker role and she's the main character, which I kind of...
Well, one thing...
Oh, go ahead, sir.
One thing I find odd about, you know, Rey's character in general as a pilot. You know, I'm looking at this LA Times article, and it's got a spot where Kathleen Kennedy's talking about Rey's character. It's fantastic, she says. I think what's great about it is Rey, her character, is such a good pilot that it isn't something that she's turning and asking how to do. It's something she's just doing. And then I look over and I see, you know, the classic Rey in her little Jakku outfit, and she's got her staff running from her ankle up past her head. And I'm thinking, that is not a weapon of a pilot. You know, like if you're going to have to climb in an X-Wing, that's not the weapon you're going to want to be grabbing. So there's that angle of, well, which kind of pilot? Because I like piloting ships. I love ships in Star Wars, Star Trek, these kind of things. And one of the big differences between Star Trek and Star Wars was Star Wars had a variety of sizes of ships. I mean, Star Trek eventually got there with shuttlecrafts and small little runabouts and things like that. But Star Wars was the one that really focused on those personal little starfighters. And when I look at her character right now and seeing that weapon, I'm just thinking, she's a good pilot, but is she going to be a pilot that's like, you know, one of those ones that drives the bus kind of pilots, or is she going to be one like Poe? You know, Poe's a character that I am really interested to see how good a pilot he is, because, you know, what was one of the comments that Oscar Isaac said about his character? The best damn starfighter pilot in the galaxy?
Yeah, that was on stage at Celebration.
Pilot. Yeah, and he said starfighter pilot, and yet, you know, Rey's a really good pilot too. And I'm like, but they're not saying anything about starfighter pilot. So I'm curious, like, you know, are we going to see her in an X-Wing? Because
so far,
I've had this fascination with the X-Wings because they show Poe hanging out the side of a white one, and yet he's clearly flying a black one. Who's going to be flying that white one?
I've seen, we've seen Rey in that clip that was released. I don't remember. What did it air on? There's the clip of her, the full explosion.
They've aired it
that was on
a
the,
few
oh,
different
AMAs.
Things. Jimmy
it
Kimmel.
It debuted, I remember now.
Jimmy Kimmel, they played on the VMAs.
Mark?
They
Hello?
Played it on a oh. bunch of different channels.
Can you hear me, Mark?
I can't. Hello?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're dealing with a kind of weird delay where it's doing that silencing thing. But we'll carry on. It first premiered on the American Music Awards. And that was the clip where Rey and Finn are running along, being attacked by TIE fighters, and she's like, "Oh, we got to go for the star jumper, or whatever it's called." And he's like, "But we need a pilot." And she says, "We've got a pilot." And he says, "You?" And that's the first time I think we got like official word that she's a pilot, other than some of the concept. Not really. I think there was leaked concept art, but there's also been a few different marketing items and toys and notebooks and calendars that have shown her piloting the Falcon. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I like the idea that Luke was known as a pilot, but he never flew the Falcon. So I think it's kind of interesting if she's a Skywalker, which, you know, we'll find out very soon.
Well,
you know, then we'll
another
know.
Angle that I like about this thought is, you know, I was always curious, was BB-8, you know, Rey's droid, because he's marketed with her. You see him there. But we later find out that, you know, he's in Poe's starfighter and stuff. And everybody's like, no, he's Poe's droid. And I was like, you know, so is Rey going to get a droid, especially if she ends up in an X-Wing kind of thing? And then there was that little article out there about R2KT is going to be in The Force Awakens. And I was thinking, how cool would it be if R2KT gets assigned to Rey as her personal astromech if she flies an X-Wing?
Oh, there's no way. Would they do that? It seems like a little overboard.
I think it'd be fan service, but that would be a fun fan service, right?
I mean, would it? I just don't think I think it's cool to have like a pink astromech as like a cameo, but it doesn't really seem to fit in with the, I don't know, visual design of the saga. You know what I mean?
And that would be the harshest criticism. I mean, that I think is the most valid point, is to not have it be, but I don't know. I mean, as a father of two little girls, there's a part of me that's like, that would be really
and
cool.
And J.J. Abrams was on air talking about how, you know, in a lot of these, one of these press tours, I think it was on Good Morning America, and he talked about how he's excited not just for dads and sons to see the movie, but for moms and their daughters to see the movie, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one, too, because he did say moms and daughters. He didn't say dads to bring their daughters, which, you know, and I'm not going to get caught up in that. But we were watching the Superman Batman trailer the other day, me and my son.
What'd you
think? And then at the end, Wonder Woman came out. I had to rush over and get my daughter, and we watched it. I watched it 8 times in a row. I was dropping F-bombs on my Facebook page. Oh, my God, that looked so cool. I was blown away. I'm a Marvel. And yet that trailer had me going. And at the end, when Wonder Woman showed up, I was like, I turned to Taylor and I go, please tell me you want to watch this movie. I would love to take you to this movie. And she's like, oh, yeah, I want to watch it. I'm like, yes.
Nice.
Thank you. Just recently, she guested on Rebels Roundtable to talk about one of the episodes. So she's getting more and more into digging on the Star Wars stuff. She finds it chic to be geek. And I'm like, you go, girl.
That's awesome, man. How old is she?
She is 13. My life is upside down.
These the last couple years have passed so fast. Yeah, you're right on the she's about the right age, though, I'd say, for The Force Awakens. It is PG-13. I don't know if we talked about that on the show here, but they have officially rated it at PG-13. And I'm not surprised at all. PG-13 is kind of the new PG. I think with the advent of Lord of the Rings to some extent, and then especially with Pirates of the Caribbean and all these superhero movies being PG-13, that's kind of the new normal when it comes to family movies, but not necessarily kids' movies.
Mm-hmm. That is an angle that – okay, so if all the movies from here on out, all Star Wars movies, were just PG-13 at their lowest rating,
yeah,
I don't see that as a problem.
Yeah, I don't either, honestly. I think they've got plenty of other platforms to reach out to kids who like Star Wars with Disney XD. Star Wars Rebels was just renewed for a third season. I think there are plenty of opportunities. But when it comes to the theatrical films, I think that straddles just the right line. I think, looking back on it, some of those movies like Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, if you watch Dead Man's Chest, it's pretty intense. With all the devils and that sort of thing. So I kind of think it actually gives them a little bit more wiggle room in terms of story. But it'll be interesting. I hope they don't go too far. I hope they never do like a super hard PG-13 version. But I guess we will find out eventually.
I wanted to ask you before we move on to the next topic is, what if they did, say, one or, you know, in the next 10 years maybe, or 15 years, 5 tops rated R films, but only in the aspect of, you know, they're going Saving Private Ryan level of wartime violence. You know, it's rated R because of the wartime violence, the gritty, dirty, blow up, lots of blood, lots of gore kind of movies. Do you think like a movie like Rogue One, not actually Rogue One, but a movie similar to it, where we've got a nitty gritty band of rebels going in to fight off, you know, this overpressing fight, you know, but do you think Star Wars could do a rated R film, or do you think that it's just taboo enough that, you know, the internet would just be all over it for it?
Here's the question that I mean, I can't answer you as well as some people, and of course, I don't have access to the internet. But I bet if you looked it up, Disney doesn't really release R-rated films. So I just think that eliminates it right there. And I think it would be cool in the same sort of like Force Unleashed cool. Force Unleashed is not a good example because I actually have a lot of respect for the story makers and storytellers and actors. That story really felt like it fit into the Star Wars universe for me. Whereas something like The Old Republic... were always really cool, but they're kind of trendy. And I think going hard R, or not necessarily even hard R, but I'm going to take a moment, Mark, and unfortunately I do have to wrap up in a few minutes here just for time. Before we move on to our last story, I want to take a moment to tell you that I am listening to How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, finally, on audiobook. And I am about halfway through, and it is incredible. It is a really well-constructed linear tale that has sort of chapter focuses on aspects of Star Wars as a franchise, as a fandom, and as a piece of art that it is. And it's broken down in a more holistic perspective, focusing on the advent of the 501st, focusing on the early posse, as they're known, that constructed the film, focusing on the ILM guys in the early days as they first built the camera rig that, you know, captured the image of the Star Destroyer flying overhead for the first time. Like, all those really cool stories that I've heard pitter-patter in here that you may have seen in a documentary, but in just a really thorough, modern sense, covers the whole saga. The story of, guess what? How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, which is well-titled. The reason I bring it up now, Mark, is because... what were we just talking about a moment ago? I apologize. I'm a little scatterbrained this evening. You're going to have to help me out, man, if you can.
Which part? Hamill and the Stormtrooper, Rey as a pilot, Ladies of Star Wars.
Oh, it was about... R-rated, of course. See, it took me...
R-rating.
I have to reach into my mind and get it to happen, man. This is what happens when you record 7 days in a row, by the way. But I say all that to say is that a lot of Lucas's contemporaries, like Spielberg, I don't think he was one of them, but there were a couple filmmakers that were looking at early cuts of Star Wars, and they were kind of poking fun of him because he wouldn't show any blood. Like, there's only one scene in the original movie that shows blood, and he never even shows any beyond that. So you see everyone getting shot and everything, and they're like, come on, man, why aren't you showing this to be like a true war movie? If it's called Star Wars, why isn't it an actual war? But Lucas was very adamant that he didn't want to show any. So I think thematically it would be out of place to see like a super gory Star Wars movie. I think that is best done in books like Red Harvest or Death Troopers, you know, as kind of one-off things for folks who really want to. But I think the theatrical Star Wars films are supposed to really hit that mass audience of Star Wars fans. And I think that when you get into R-rated territory, it gets a little too niche. That's my thoughts on it.
That is a rougher one.
Now, Mark, we have a couple things to talk about, though, before we go, right?
Well, yeah, and before we get there, I wanted to ask you about that Star Wars Conquering the Galaxy. Does it ever mention the canon divide or the continuity divide that Lucas licensing created? The concept where Lucas went from saying, well, there's my universe, and then there's that other thing, too. Oh, this other thing is official canon. And where all the fans were, you know, that whole back and forth as to whether the EU was ever canon.
Yeah, Lucas.
That was something that eventually evolved because of Lucas licensing.
There is a brief... Yes, it does, actually. There's a chapter that touches on it. I don't remember which one. It's not really anything new for you or me, Mark, but it's kind of... It touches on how there's the days of the 90s, he kind of just farmed out the publishing house, and they basically worked very independently. And he was... Of course, he was never public about it, but he was never a big fan of the way the expanded universe carried on the story of his characters, particularly, I think, with Luke Skywalker. And the whole Mara Jade.
Yeah.
And so he like mentioned the robot chicken behind the scenes skit that they did with him where he just pretended to hate Mara Jade, where it probably wasn't as much pretend as we like to think. He probably actually does have some legitimate sore feelings about her.
I could just see his son like pointing at him now. Dad, it's funny because it's true.
Exactly. Yeah, that kind of you get the sense that that's kind of what it was all about. And there, it touched on a few other things when it comes to continuity. But really, just I think the main quote that it featured that I had forgotten about when he gave an interview. I want to say, I believe it was his interview with the Family Guy creator, not Seth Rogen.
Oh, Seth MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane. There's all these Seth Rogen, Seth Meyers, Seth MacFarlane. There's all these Seths. But yes, Seth MacFarlane, when he did an interview with George Lucas around the time that they're doing that Family Guy special, I think that's the interview, if I'm remembering correctly, that talks about when he says, well, I think of myself, it's the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And he gave that analogy of saying, like, you know, I rule the films, and the TV series are the Father, and that's kind of my direct involvement. And then you have the Son, which is all the various publishing houses and the other stories, which I'm not involved in at all. I think that's something along those lines. He's basically saying without saying that those aren't what I count as Star Wars. And since he's the guy who started Star Wars, those words kind of meant a lot, at least at the time. Not so much anymore. But then, of course, and he said the Holy Ghost, all the fan fiction, fan creation, fan organizations like the 501st. And I think
the three tiers. That's
exactly.
That's always funny because, like, when people talk about canon levels, sometimes they forget that before the canon levels came, there was Lucas's three tiers. Because, Lucas was always saying the same thing.
Yeah, I get the sense that there's a lot, and I still feel pretty strongly about this, and even in some of the recent publishing from the post-Disney era, there's been a lot of the books that I feel like don't touch on the parts of Star Wars that I most love, and I think it's fair to say that many people would, you know, kind of discount aspects of the expanded universe that really just felt out of place and that didn't get Star Wars and really all right, so here we go. I apologize, this show is going to go longer than I meant it to, but you know what, it's fine, because I'm sure if you're listening to this, I hope you enjoy it, because Riley has something to say about Star Wars after listening, because I'm about halfway through this book, and he really does a good job of breaking down just how little Lucas tells you, intentionally so at the time. George Lucas really likes kind of like Tolkien in some ways to create a universe, but you know, you get toss away lines like if you look at the opening crawl, it says it is a period of civil war. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first battle against the evil Galactic Empire. It tells you exactly what you need to know to set up the conflict, but nothing more. It doesn't tell you who the rebels are, where they come from, how big is this galaxy, is it related to our galaxy, what is this hidden base. Do we ever find out what the hidden base is? No! Rebel spaceship striking from a hidden base won their first victory against the evil Galactic. It's like we just jumped into the middle of a Flash Gordon serial and missed the last episode where these rebel ships striking from a hidden base won the battle against the Galactic Empire. So I say all that to say
they
is
do
that
similar with episode 2 and 3 too. They do. With Dooku. In that, like, 2, they go Count Dooku. In the 3rd one, they're like the Sith Lord Count Dooku. You're like, wait, what?
Well, and so he drops you in the middle and doesn't over-explain things. He wants you to. He doesn't tell you what Banthas are, or why Sand people, you know, walk in single file, or you know, there's just so much unexplained that he dares to let the audience fill in with their mind. And so when one of the fundamental flaw with a lot of the expanded universe that I won't even say that with some of the recent books, when I got halfway through A New Dawn, but didn't finish, which I've talked about a few times on the show, it's just, I think they try to over explain things, way too much and go into far too much detail instead of focusing on the characters and their motivations. And they try to answer. Brian Brushwood has talked about this when he's been on the show. They try to answer these questions instead of establishing the questions. And I think that's what if you're trying to explain the day to day schedule of the Jedi in, I'm trying to think of the book series that I read most of. It was Fate of the Jedi.
New Jedi Order?
No, Fate of the Jedi. It started off with an incredible sequence of wondering of these Jedi going insane, right? in that book series. And of course, this, and I'm speaking off of memory of books that came out like 5 years ago now. But I loved it. I remember the first book. I don't remember the title or the author, but I remember just dropping into the middle of all of these Jedi going crazy and not knowing why, and that being a big question posed. But instead of kind of following that story and following that lead, by the time we start to understand what Abeloth is, which I still never really fully understood, there's been so much.
Well, that's because she's based off the mother and father and brother that we never quite understood either.
Good Lord. But there's so many detours explaining the minutia of the day-to-day lives of the various Jedi Masters. And it reads like a soap opera and not like a space opera. Ooh. Quote that. That's a great quote. In fact, write that down right now, Mark, because the title of this episode is Soap Opera versus Space Opera. And that's what you have to get right, because there is drama there, but not detailed drama. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And the book that you're talking about was Outcast by the late, great Aaron Alston. You know, and you said it earlier, and I think it really resonates with everything you were just saying. When we were talking about, you know, the rated R movies, you said those kind of details are best for a book. And I think you're right, because everything you're explaining.
Oh, are you there, Mark? Okay, got to pause my record.
To have those kind of explanations in the film.
Oh, Mark, are you there? All right, we'll pause real quick and we'll get it right back. And say that we are back in the recording. Technical issues resolved at no cost or time to the listener. Mark, you were saying.
Well, I was thinking about something you were saying about those details don't need to be in the film. That's what the books are for. And I think you're right, because everything you say about not wanting all the mystery explained is absolutely true, but not for everyone. You know, like there's an element of fans like you, and then there are elements of fans that they want that stuff. But you're right. The film is not always the best place to put it. If you have all the answers in the film, then you're not going to want to know more. But the books do offer a great place for those mysteries, which is where I get with this story group canon. It's like, I want to know how well they're focusing it. Because, you know, the biggest complaint that people have about Legends was that there was a lot of quantity and very little quality. And so far in just this year alone, we've had the same thing all over again. What did we get for Friday? 20 books. Of those 20 books, not all of them were books that you needed to have told. And that's kind of where I want good quality stories. I don't care about a quantity of books. I want the story to actually matter. And I've wanted that from back when I was a Legends fan. But now these books are as much canon as the films. So it's like, when they matter, they really should mean these books matter. Like, we're still waiting to see a character that was created in the books make it into the TV show and those things. The closest we got is the early in Rebels, but he was created for Rebels, but they put him in a book first and then tied him into Rebels. So, you know, it's not like an Aaliyah Secura where, you know, the character existed in the not canon comics and they're like, hey, let's bring it in, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know, that whole realm of using books to give that thing, you know, to explain some of the stuff in the Old Republic, and you know, to explain some things with Sidious and Plagueis and what's going on with Vader and getting into the characters' minds and stuff, and that can go either way, because, you know, what if you got somebody that gets into Vader's head and he wants Vader to kind of go, you know, throwing his lightsaber a lot? So say you got one writer, you're reading that book, and Vader's just throwing his lightsaber every five steps, you know, and then you get to another book, and the other guy, the way he wants Vader to be, is force choking everyone, you know, like, you don't want like one of those back and forth kind of thing. You want it to feel like it's the same character.
You want, yeah, you want consistency.
Yeah, and that's what we as fans want, is that solidness. That's the beauty of them splitting Legends like that, is that divide should have gone away, but unfortunately, even I, as a fan of Legends, we're still going to want those stories whether they're ever going to be told or not. So there's that angle, but now that that's off to the side, all fans are able to look at the comic and the films and go, hey, these all exist in the same universe. And that is unique, that everyone in the creative process understands that and is at least working towards building the new saga.
Absolutely. It is. It's an interesting, it's a tough challenge, because part of why we love the Star Wars universe is how vast it is and how many amazing planets and vehicles and weapons and characters, and it's enormous. It's unparalleled, and it's a very different universe, if I'm being honest, Mark, because as much as I kind of stepped on my pedestal here and I was like, you shouldn't over-explain, which is kind of an argument I used to hate of people who made the case against the prequels, using that very argument. I think there's merit to it, but you have to remember it is a different time now that we live in. It's a time where we do have 6 theatrical Star Wars films and 40 years of canon, both Legends and Story Group now. And you can't ignore that fact. It's a very vast universe, and that's one reason it has become so successful, and there are so many different fans of different stripes and colors. Mr. Herleman, I don't know if you can hear it in the background because of our internet connection, but in the background right now, it's the music. The dreaded music that all of my co-hosts on Star Wars
Tonight... The train's coming to take us home.
Exactly. We're going to have to wrap up this episode because, Mark, you know what we got to do right after this? What, Riley? I love this. I love the delay. I'm just going to leave it all in. No, what we're going to do right after this, Mark, is record an episode of Star Wars Tonight exclusively for our patrons supporting us at patreon.com/StarWarsReport because we're putting out 4 episodes a week in the feed, which I thought was insane enough. But I just thought, what the heck? Might as well do 5. So we're doing our 5th episode, and we're talking on Star Wars Tonight right after this. We got to get that recorded, and then this episode will be going up probably tomorrow sometime. So, man, it's a big challenge, but we're having a great time putting out just an insane amount of content at StarWarsReport.com. But here's the thing you got to remember. Yes,
man,
the music
is
playing.
It is insane.
I just want
to say I was putting up the episode of Beyond the Films, and I had to go back 3 pages. I was like, "Wow, there's a lot of content on the site right now."
I don't know that I may just swear off ever doing this kind of thing again. But man, it's been a blast. Absolutely. All right, so I'm going to make sure that our levels are good. Good. And I just want to say, Mark, you know what? There's something that we're doing this weekend that I'm very excited about, and it is a live watch party and commentary of Star Wars A New Hope, the film that started it all, carrying on our live coverage of the Star Wars films as we're doing these watch parties in the anticipation of The Force Awakens. We're doing one at StarWarsReport.com/live this Saturday. That means if you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance a lot of you are listening to it the day it's happening. So what you want to do is go to StarWarsReport.com/watchparty. StarWarsReport.com/watchparty. That takes you to a blog post I set up that gets the link to the Facebook event. We'll be posting all the updates right there on the Facebook event. And also just remember, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to be streaming on my Twitch channel, which will be embedded right there at StarWarsReport.com/live, the home of all live content produced from StarWarsReport.com. Make sure that you email us at StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. It's at StarWarsReport. We're at Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. And it's the season of Star Wars. We want to get the word out of this podcast. I mean, huge thanks to everyone who's been getting out the word and leaving reviews on Star Wars Tonight. But we also need the help right here. So if you want to help get the word out about this show, make sure you go to iTunes and leave us a review. It's at StarWarsReport.com/iTunes. Mark, folks should follow you on Twitter.
Really?
It's at IllogicalRogue2. They should do the same for me. I'm at The Riley Guy.
Yeah.
And make sure you're listening to Star Wars Tonight and Star Wars Beyond the Films, available in your podcatcher of choice. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Our Bothans are dying so much, you swear that it's me playing Battlefront 4.
Yes, indeed. Boodle-deet boot. You know, that actually...
I suck at that game. I'm, like, blown away by how much I'm sucking.
I am so Yeah, that episode, that was a good episode, man. We kind of started off soft, and then we got all philosophical towards the end. I like it. Nicely done. All right, let me stop the recorder here.
Yeah, and there's so many.